From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. All of the major cruise lines that visit Juneau have signed an agreement with the city. It's the first of its kind in Alaska.
This was kind of the grab bag of issues that came out of the task force that we wanted to get down on paper early or first.
That's the city's tourism manager, Alexandra Pierce, referring to the city's visitor industry task force. That group recommended many of the commitments in this agreement back in March of 2020, just as the COVID-19 pandemic began shutting everything down. The industry's commitments range from sharing ship schedules in advance to keeping big outdoor screens turned off while in port. The industry will also support using cruise ship passenger taxes to expand Centennial Hall. Renee Limoges-Reeve of Cruise Lines International Association in Alaska says there's no enforcement mechanism. It's just an agreement made in good faith. But she said the cruise lines do get something back, even if the text doesn't really capture it.
I wouldn't say that we give up a lot. What I would say is that we are able to have a welcoming environment when we come to Juneau. And it's important, again, that we are good partners in the communities that we visit, so that we are welcome.
Both Reeve and Pierce say this collaborative agreement is a big deal. It's a huge shift from the adversarial relationship that came to a head in 2016 when CLIA Alaska sued the city over its collection and use of cruise passenger taxes. The judge's 2018 ruling in that case led to the city and the industry to work together to decide how to spend those passenger taxes.
I would far rather have conversations and come to collaborative solutions this way than through anything like a lawsuit or a regulation or a law. I'd rather just have a conversation and make sure that we are following the will of the community.
Pierce says this agreement complements other longstanding relationships and programs in Juneau. For example, she says the same business that's handled logistics and scheduling for the cruise lines for years will stay on. And tourism best management practices, the industry's voluntary program for fielding and responding to community complaints, will continue.
You know, all of these different organizations and programs work together in concert to manage tourism in our community, and this is just another effort and another tool, and direct with the cruise lines as opposed to through a third party of some sort.
Pierce says this may be the first of several agreements of this sort to come. As part of the state's effort to reduce a backlog of 20,000 missing DNA samples used for evidence, Juneau police can now ask some people for a cheek swab during traffic stops and other interactions. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has the story.
If you get pulled over in Juneau and the police run your ID and see that you have a record, they could ask for a DNA sample.
And they do a cheek swab is typically how that's done.
That's Lieutenant Craig Campbell from the Juneau Police Department.
Because we try to minimize any interruption in the person's day, and we can collect that very quickly and let the person go on about their business.
Governor Mike Dunleavy announced the state's plan to collect, quote, owed DNA late last year.
We're tackling a 25-year-old problem that dates back a quarter of a century.
The state says that missing evidence makes it harder to solve violent crimes, like sexual assaults. Dunleavy's announcement came after the Anchorage Daily News reported that many police departments across Alaska were not collecting the required DNA samples for arrests for certain crimes. Some didn't even know they should have been collecting the evidence at all. Austin McDaniel is a spokesperson from the state's Department of Public Safety. He says that DNA requirements are based on a decades-old law.
You know, the initial statute was passed in 1995, and it's been updated 8 times since it was initially passed.
At first, the statute required police to collect samples from anyone convicted of a crime against a person. And now, police are supposed to collect samples after arrests, not just convictions, for all felonies and even some misdemeanors. That's caused the ACLU of Alaska to raise privacy concerns.
Our DNA can reveal some of the most personal and private information that we have.
Megan Edge is the communications director for the ACLU.
And as states and Alaska expands their collection of DNA evidence, you know, there's a growing risk that the information being collected and used is being used against us or without our consent.
She also said that DNA should be obtained, quote, in the least obtrusive means possible. McDaniel, from the Public Safety Department, explains how the collection process works. He says they flag people around the state who they want to collect DNA from. These could come up through a records check during any kind of contact with police, including traffic stops.
So that way, if that individual was to have contact with law enforcement for any other purpose, they would alert that law enforcement officer that person did lawfully owe DNA, and that officer would need to work to collect that DNA at that time.
Lieutenant Campbell from the Juneau Police Department says that giving a sample is mandatory for people who've been convicted of qualifying offenses.
And if you do decline, there's a chance that you could get criminal charges.
Campbell says that at this time, Juneau police are only using the state's flagged files to know if someone owes DNA. But McDaniel says state troopers are working more proactively to collect samples. Megan Edge says the ACLU of Alaska is monitoring the issue, and that people can reach out to them if they have concerns. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quimry.
The union that represents over 1,000 University of Alaska faculty has filed an unfair labor practices complaint against the university's administration. United Academics and the university have been in contract negotiations for a year. The union's president says the administration acted illegally this spring when it unilaterally declared an impasse and imposed a new contract despite ongoing federally mediated negotiations. The University of Alaska spokesperson says the complaint is under review and it is committed to the mediation process on the remaining issues. Both sides say they are still bargaining in good faith. The union says they've mostly agreed on pay raises, but there are outstanding issues around academic freedom, tenure, and whether postdoctoral students and visiting faculty are covered by the agreement. The village of New Napachuk near Bethel has started constructing a new laundromat and water treatment building. That's after their old one began to sink into the tundra and tilt dangerously to one side. If the building collapses, the village may lose access to treated water. KYUK's Will McCarthy has more.
It's unclear exactly when the old water treatment plant and laundromat building in New Napachuk began shifting, but in mid-July, Jacob Tabithuk said the situation became impossible to ignore.
I think it shifted about an inch or two last month. The workers were saying they heard a loud crack, like a pop, and then felt the building move. And there was one person who was working. She said when that happened, it scared her so much that she almost ran out the building.
Tabitha grew up in Napachuk and is now the city's grant writer. He said as a kid, he and his friends would come into the water building in the winter to warm up, and the building was always relatively level. But in recent years, its southwestern corner has begun to sink, and Tabithik said the building is already leaning about 20 degrees. He fears it's close to collapse.
It's getting to the point where it's kind of dangerous, because if it shifts on the southern end like 6 inches or more, I think that whole back end is going to fall off. And then when you walk along the building and you look at the walls, you can see that the plywood's kind of starting to warp and shift, or the plywood's starting to crack.
The building houses both the laundromat and New Napachuk's water treatment facility. If it collapses, there will be no other source in the village for running water. Although Tabithik said that most people capture rain for drinking water, residents use the treated water for doing dishes, washing clothes, and flushing toilets. As a precaution, the village closed down the laundromat a few weeks ago. Residents of New Napachuk have been traveling to Kasigluk to do laundry instead, a 10 or 15-minute boat ride. Kasigluk blocked off 2 days a week for people from New Napachuk to do their laundry. Construction has already begun on a new laundromat and water treatment facility, and crews are currently working 12-hour days. Representatives from the state-run Village Safe Water Program came out to New Napachuk 2 weeks ago to inspect the water building. Jason Bloom, Village Safe Water's program manager, said they recognize that the building has foundation issues, but they have to weigh that concern against the public health concern of having no access to clean water were the building to shut down. Bloom said that they'll continue to monitor the building. Still, Tobithik has trouble trusting their judgment, in part because the longtime water treatment operator doesn't have faith in the building.
Who are you going to trust? Somebody who never worked there a day in their lives? Or a person who's been working there for years and years? I think I'd feel more comfortable, you know, taking his advice over somebody who came in and just looked at it.
The sinking building is part of a broader concern in New Napachuk, where just about everything is getting wetter and more unstable. Both Tabithik and City Administrator Juliana Wasili said that in recent years, the town has become increasingly swampy. Many places don't grow vegetation anymore, and large stretches of boardwalk are submerged. It gets worse every spring.
My guess would be the permafrost is deteriorating faster than we can adapt, I guess.
The village has discussed relocation, but there are no hard plans on that front yet. In Bethel, I'm Will McCarthy.
And finally, embattled Ketchikan City Council candidate Dave Timmerman has officially ended his campaign and is asking residents not to vote for him. That's after KRBD published an investigation into his criminal history. Ketchikan City Clerk Kim Stanker said in an email today that Timmerman filed a formal request late Monday afternoon to withdraw from the race. But because he filed his request after the ballot was finalized, Timmerman's name will appear on the October 4th ballot. Court records show Timmerman was convicted in 2018 of violating a restraining order that stemmed from his relationship with an 18-year-old woman while he was 46. Timmerman apologized in a Facebook post Monday evening and asked residents not to vote for him. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.